You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the program, fantasy writer Patrick Rothfuss joins us for this week's Geek Out segment.
First, it's a question humans have asked for centuries. Can we live forever? Science would probably say no, but that hasn't stopped people from trying to extend their lives, and in some cases, trying to achieve eternal life in either a physical or a spiritual form.
But there's more to it than just chasing the fountain of youth. Confronting our mortality brings up all kinds of questions about the nature of life and death. Our next guest has written an extensive account that tries to get to the bottom of it all.
Joining us now is Adam Leith Gulner. He's a writer and former editor of Vice magazine, the author of The Book of Immortality, The Science, Belief, and Magic Behind Living Forever. Adam, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to start with a dream you had. You were just getting going on this book, or maybe it was even before those seeds were planted. You dreamed about a particular fountain. Can you tell us that dream?
Yeah, the book for me began with this dream. I was in London. I thought that my next book was going to be about a history of labyrinths. And I was out at this hedged maze all day taking notes, and I fell asleep and had this dream, this powerful dream of a fountain. And I woke up and I thought, what does that represent? What is the fountain? What is the fountain of youth? What is the idea of immortality? And where did that come from?
And what happened after that? Did you decide that was a sign from the beyond?
5 years went by, and here we are. I don't know if it was a sign from the beyond. I just thought it was a dream, but it was one of those dreams that stayed with me. You know, sometimes we wake up from dreams, and they kind of haunt us throughout the day, and it was one of those dreams. You know, I kept on thinking about it and wondering, what is that symbol? Like, what does that represent? And where does it come from? And just the more I thought about it, the more I realized that there was a story there. So I was curious, and that's what happened.
Well, it's interesting when you think about it, and you go back through the ages, and it's hard to find a period. In fact, I don't think there is one where people weren't somehow obsessed, at least some portion of people, with living forever, whether it was a holy grail or a fountain of youth. What is it with humans that we are so obsessed with living forever?
Well, what it is that we can't fully make sense of death. It doesn't really make sense to us. We know that it happens, but we all suspect that there must be some way around it, or that there might be a way around it. And so we've always looked for solutions or for ways out of the inevitable. And that's part of what makes us who we are. We're driven to try to transcend our limitations, and so are all forms of life. You know, that's what kind of DNA in its very nature does. It kind of pulses forward and tries to become something greater than what it is. And I think that we have that within us as well. And we've always tried. We've never succeeded, but I think we will never stop trying either.
Now, in the beginning of your book, you start with some of the crazy and strange and weird things that we have done as a species, human beings, to try to extend and live forever. Tell us about some of those things that we've tried over the years.
There are so many things. I mean, that's part of one of the great joys of writing a book is the research phase. And for me, it could have gone on literally forever. I mean, I just kept learning more and more about the extent of what we've tried to do in trying to live forever. And I think some of the stories that really stuck out with me were the stories that took place in Imperial China, especially during the Tang Dynasty, when emperors were taking these elixirs of eternal life that were intended to make them live forever, but actually ended up killing them because they had mercury in them. No, that's one of the more unusual phases. There are so many things we've done, so many methods we've tried, from alchemy to magic to chemistry, and they're all so interesting, but they are also all, so far, have been failures, which is, you know, kind of what brings us to today. Are we finally the one perfect generation that has the solution to this question that has been with us since the beginning of time?
Yeah, you've said so far. I mean, do you really believe that there could be a possibility of immortality in some form?
I don't know. I don't know whether I believe it or not. I think that I'm not closed to it. I'm certainly not somebody who is like an active believer in physical immortalism, like some of the people who I interviewed in this book who are really actively trying to make eternal life here and now a possibility. Like, I'm not somebody who wants that to happen, but, you know, all signs suggest that it won't happen. I mean, that's basically how I look at it. But do I know the future? No. That's also, you know, I think it's important to be balanced and measured and not to make predictions. I mean, I think some people make predictions, but as soon as you get into predictions of the future, you're a believer. And I don't think I believe either way. Who knows what science will come up with? But it seems unlikely that we'll ever find a way around this one certainty, death.
Well, one thing that people are trying and have tried for a little while now is this idea of freezing the body. And I guess the idea then is that you just hang out, you wait, and then wait for science to catch up, and then you get revived, you get unfrozen, and boom, you're good to go.
Boom. There are a few leaps that you have to make in order for that to make sense. The idea that science will find some way of bringing dead bodies back to life. So that's the first thing. We haven't figured out how to do that yet. And the second is you have to assume that there will somehow be some time in the future when we are able to resuscitate dead bodies and will also be able to cure them of whatever diseases they had that or whatever it was that caused their death. I mean, it's to me, going into the world of the cryonicists made me realize that it's just a funeral home. Like, we can dispose of cadavers however we choose. We can bury them in the ground. We can burn them. We can send them up on rockets and into space and firecrackers. However we want to do, we can bury them in the ocean. Whatever we want to do, we can do. And cryonics seems to me to be just another form of burial. They would not agree with that assessment. They do not see these bodies as dead bodies. They see them as temporary incurables, patients who are in suspended animation, and when the time comes, will be brought back to life.
You visited one of these places, right?
What
was it like?
I mean, it was eerie. It was a bunch of white thermoses, each filled with five bodies, which are buried head first in sleeping bags and covered in liquid nitrogen. And They have to be perfused, which is the technical term for having your blood replaced with antifreeze.
That doesn't sound undoable. I could be wrong there.
It was weird, and it smelled strange in there also.
And people do this to their pets too, right? It's not just human beings. I don't know. Are there any famous people who have, or their families have owned up to having them cryogenically frozen?
Yeah, the two most famous stories, one seems to be an urban mythology, urban legend, would be Walt Disney. He doesn't seem to be actually frozen. And the second is the baseball player Ted Williams, whose head, this is a potentially litigious topic, but whose remains are frozen at one of the facilities in Arizona. But that was a big debate, and some of his heirs wanted him to be cryonically preserved and others didn't, and it was a legal battle, and it's a whole messy situation.
And another area of this, you know, maybe getting more into science of the day, of the moment, that seems maybe more plausible to our computer gear brains, is that maybe at some point we could download our consciousness into a computer and live forever, I don't know, digitally.
Yeah, this is basically the latest take on the quest for eternal life. And we've always used leaps in technology as a way of making kind of leaps in judgment, where we say, oh, look, we figured out how refrigerators and freezers work. That means we figured out immortality. Or we say, you know, we figured out how to fly across the Atlantic Ocean with Lindbergh. As soon as he did that, he set to work on trying to figure out how immortality works. Every technological leap brings with it a tendency for us to think that immortality is right around the corner. So it's not a surprise that people have done this with computing and internet systems and cybernetic ideas and technologies. So what the singularitarians are saying, that's what they're called. They're people who believe in the singularity, which means the moment where human brains will merge with computers to become one thing, will find a way, they say, to upload our consciousness into computerized hard drives, therefore backing up our personalities. And if anything happens to our body, like let's say it gets hit by a truck or it dies somehow, it won't be a problem, and we'll just need to download our minds into other bodies that will be likely made up out of nanobots and other robotic components. So in essence, what these people are suggesting is that we will find a way to become cyborgs. We'll no longer be humans. We'll be something else. They call it human version 2.0, and they say that that's how we're going to attain immortality. What I wonder is whether this is something that everybody wants. And most of the people who I've spoken to in the course of researching this book don't really want that.
Right.
But there's some real big money pushing for this to happen. And one of the goals of this book is to kickstart a conversation about the bioethics of this very idea.
Well, you also wonder, I mean, to play with that thought experiment, how the human mind would take to being lodged inside a computer. It's not what that mind is used to.
Definitely not. I mean, what these people would say is that we're going to evolve, and our mind is going to evolve, and we're going to be, you know, our minds are going to be heightened exponentially through the ability to interface with computerized technology. So they think that, you know, whatever we are right now is very limited compared to what we will be then. But these people are utopians. I mean, they also think that, you know, there'll be money won't be an issue, and we'll be able to live forever, and, you know, there won't be any medical problems. And, you know, they don't look at Wi-Fi the same way I do. Like, I think it's, I mean, I travel a lot. It's often hard to get a Wi-Fi connection. And they're talking about, like, somehow having, like, connections between tiny robots in our bloodstream and Wi-Fi signals. Like, just the mess that that's going to cause to me seems, like, immense and also, like, terrifying. But to them, they see it as just this perfect situation in which we're all going to live perfect immortal lives.
Well, we're talking right now with Adam Gollner about the science, belief, and magic behind living forever. And we want to hear from you. Do you think humans will ever unlock a secret to immortality? Would you, given the option, you know, perhaps to be downloaded into a computer or something else, cryogenically frozen, revived, would you want to live forever? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll get to your calls and your comments right after the break. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks, Kristen. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation now about immortality with Adam Gollner. He's the author of The Book of Immortality. And we're taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also post your thoughts and feelings about this on the Central Time Facebook page. Would you want to live forever if science did offer us a route to immortality? And I want to read a little bit from your book, Adam. We want immortality so badly that we're always ready to be swept away into unthinkingness. Pitchman claimed that injecting stem cells into our skin will make us young forever. But then women who've undergone pioneering surgical stem cell facelifts discover tiny bones growing in their eyelids. Each blink sounds like a tiny castanet snapping shut. That does not sound like what anyone wants.
I loved finding that. I mean, I definitely find some beauty in the absurdity of these attempts. And there's something about it that, you know, this idea of being swept into unthinkingness. First off, let me just say, I don't think we all desire immortality so badly, but I do think we have this kind of innate urge to try to find a solution to death. Like, nobody wants to die. Nobody wants to die. Some of us have a better level of acceptance of it than others. But whenever these stories come at us, like, for example, one of the stories that made me think of that idea of getting swept into unthinkingness, one of them is this story that was the cover story of the New York Times magazine about a half a year ago, where they said that they had found this immortal jellyfish in Japan. And it wasn't a news story, but I was kind of taken aback because I'd, of course, heard about this story several years earlier when doing the reporting for this book. And a writer had seized on it and said, look, we found this immortal jellyfish, and there's a scientist in Japan that's working on it, and I need to go out there and find out what's going on. And it was this breathless story of this jellyfish that has this incredible rejuvenating capacity where if you somehow almost kill it, it comes back to life. But it's the same thing as a worm in many ways. Like, if you cut the head off a worm, it regenerates itself in some ways. Now, that story, you had to get to page 14 of 15 to be told that the immortal jellyfish isn't immortal at all. In fact, it's very easily killed, often eaten by predators, and it dies the moment you take it out of water. And so it was this interesting story to me, you know, that we could get so kind of swept up in the possibilities of it. And it seems to happen over and over and over again. And that's why it's hard to trust many of these pseudoscientists or people who aren't actually scientists who are saying, guess what? We can make you live forever. We found the immortalizing cell, or we found the way to target the genes that'll make you live forever. All you need to do is give us $1,000 a month for the rest of your life. And people are willing to do that. I mean, people are spending a lot of money on unproven treatments. And I think that the stem cell treatments are one of them. You know, this idea that we just shoot stem cells up and live forever.
It seems like a hard thing for us to outgrow as a species. Well, I want to get to the phone calls now. And we've got David on the line in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, David.
Oh, I have a few comments. One, this downloading to Cyborg. Hey, if someone made a Cyborg download it, and then you're still alive, and now you have an exact copy of, oh, we're going to kill you now. Like, oh, so much for that.
You mean and like then, getting your personality deleted?
Well, yeah. I mean, here, if you'd be able to make a exact copy into a machine, and then the machine unit does everything, but you're still there, you know. it's an exact copy of you. You know, you're going to kill yourself then? I mean,
So there's a lot of tangles to get inside when we talk about being inside a computer. What do you think, Adam?
That's for sure. I mean, I think that's kind of an appropriate response, I would say.
Okay, let's go to Jared. He's next in Green Bay. Hi, Jared.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Let's see here. First off, there's one... I'm kind of a science fiction goober, and one thing that occurs to me in this talk of the whole, like, you know, brain downloading thing, and even generalized immortality, is that it leaves out, you know, a problem that no matter what, you're still stuck with that personality. It's usually a thing you see in fiction where, like, the dude who's been alive for, you know, like, X hundreds of years eventually, like, goes insane just from the sheer weight of memory. Like, even if you fix all of our, like, physical problems, you still get, you know, that level of deterioration purely on a personality level. And also, I'm really not 100% on the whole thing with, like, with machines being so eternal. I don't know about you, but I've never had a computer that lasted for more than 5 years, whereas my brain has been operating for a good 25 now.
Uh-huh. All right.
Yeah. And, one last thing. There's a game called Eclipse Phase that actually has some pretty good science fiction regarding post-singularity stuff like personality duplication, you know, like uploading into new bodies and so forth. So if your guest hasn't heard of that one, he may find that amusing because it's got a lot of pretty good thought out stuff for how that actually affects the society.
All right. Well, thank you so much for those thoughts, Jared. I mean, getting at the question of, do we even want this? I mean, I think that's a sort of a poignant thought about being burdened with the memories of, you know, forever, if this goes on forever. There's a lot of stuff in my, you know, not nearly hundreds of years that I wouldn't mind forgetting.
Yeah. I think that the caller just brought up a great point, you know, that this is basically something that belongs to the realm of science fiction. That's how I feel about it. I love science fiction. I'm fascinated by it. I also love science. And I'm also fascinated by belief and religion. So I'm totally open, and I'm not a person with an axe to grind. But I do find it curious that many of the people who advocate for this sort of physical immortality through the singularity, they seem to have blurred the lines between science fiction and science. And they, you know, just because we can think it doesn't mean that we should necessarily do it. And so, you know, these stories are great for science fiction and for, you know, trying to imagine hypothetical outcomes of, you know, post-immortal societies. Great. Awesome thought exercise. But do we really want that to be actual science happening here and now? That's a whole other question, and it's a whole other conversation. And we see it happening again and again and again in the history of this quest for eternal life, where people look at what is kind of a mythology or what we could say science fiction today, and they say, let's make that real. And that's what's fascinating about it to me.
Now, you did a pretty exhaustive search on the subject. You talked about it taking 5 years to write this book. And I wonder, did you find anyone along the way where you thought, you know what, if anyone could do it, it's this group of people. Maybe immortality, maybe just extreme longevity. Did you meet anyone or come across anyone like that?
I mean, I spoke to a lot of people who were spiritual leaders in the research for this book. So people who weren't actually looking for physical immortality so much as spiritual immortality, the idea that after death, some part of them will live on in an afterlife that they believe in. And they all had very interesting stories that to me were just as interesting as the stories that physical immortalists had. But all of them, to me, fell into the category of belief. None of them had a story that to me could provide me with any certainty. You know, none of them were like, oh, that's what's going to happen. All of them had stories that we could choose to believe in or not believe in. And I thought they were all good and valid as ways of helping people cope with the unknowability of death and of helping them deal with grief. I think that these stories are all important as long as they aren't being used to hurt anybody, which is also a possibility.
Well, we've got about 50 seconds left, but having given this so much thought, do you think that you would in some way want to live forever? Do you think most people want that?
I think most people don't want to live forever. I think what people really want is to have a long, healthy life that ends relatively painlessly without a long, slow descent into, you know, the final decades of age-related diseases and senescence. I think people would like to live to a ripe old age and be healthy throughout and then quickly pass on in their sleep. And I think that's what I would like as well.
All right. Well, Adam, thank you so much. It's been fascinating to hear about all this.
Well, thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Adam Leith-Gollner. He is the author of The Book of Immortality, The Science, Belief, and Magic Behind Living Forever.
Coming up next, speaking of science fiction, we'll geek out with fantasy writer Patrick Rothfuss. We'll talk about video games as an art form. Do they tell as powerful stories as books and movies? And if not, can they? Stick around. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. You're listening to Central Time. News is coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned.